You're listening to the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast with John Rabin. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast. It's John Rabin here, and this is episode 115. And I'm recording this on September 9th. 2020, in the middle of a sporadic thunderstorm. The thunderstorm isn't, is it sporadic? Yeah, it goes on and off, and it's unpredictable and kind of annoying. And I decided I would quit trying to wait it out and just record this because I'm like, if it thunders, it thunders, you know. If the power cuts out, well, then the power cuts out, and I'll start over from when I saved it. I don't know. We're just going to do it. And it's been yet another week. Technically a week. It's been 7 days since I've spoken to you. It was funny because until yesterday, what I wanted to talk about, The top thing that I had written on notes that I wanted to talk about was that Taco Bell was getting rid of the Mexican pizza, because that was my biggest grievance at the moment. And that was mind blowing to me because they've always had Mexican pizza. That's always been there for me whenever I wanted, vaguely Mexican food shaped in a disc that was bad for me, but quick, Taco Bell was there. But I think they're ditching it because it takes a minute to 2 minutes longer to make than all their other things that they can squirt out of a caulking gun and send on your way. So it's like, I think it's cutting into their profits, or since because of the pandemic and social distancing and everything else, and people going through the drive-thru, they want to keep that drive-thru just going, and it just kind of throws a wrench into the gears, I guess, of their machine. So, but RIP Mexican pizza, starting in November. It's bullshit. Anyway, I was going to keep talking about it, and try to stretch it for a good 10 minutes on how I would prefer that they keep it, just because it's something that I like versus their practical reasons for smoother service. But instead, so I'm going to talk, I wanted to talk just a lot, maybe the whole rest of the 20 minutes or so that I'm going to be here, about the fact that the A Club Comedy Club in Austin, Texas, which has been here for 20 something years? I mean, it was the Laugh Stop before, but then it became Cap City Comedy Club, announced they were closing their doors permanently yesterday, and it shook the shit out of everybody that I know, all the comedians. A lot of posts on social media, a lot of stories and a lot of nostalgia, because it meant a lot to most everybody that I know, and to me. And I wanted to talk about it because, just to kind of share I wanted to make it about me. All right. That's what I wanted to do. It's all about me. But because you can post something on Facebook and, talk about everybody. But I wanted to actually take the time to just kind of talk it out, because I had a very complicated, one-sided relationship with Cap City. And I say one-sided, it's like, oh, we had a contentious relationship. It's not true at all. They, it's like at one point, I felt like I had burned the bridge to Cap City, but that was completely on my in my brain. Like there was a bridge that wasn't there. Have you ever done that where you're like, oh, I burned that bridge, but there was no bridge. There was nothing crossing that water. Or you burned it in your head, but it's still there. Like on their end, they're like, nothing's changed, you know, kind of a thing. Because I've had a relationship or known those people who have run the club and who have, you know, people worked at the club for 22 years. It's a long time. Maybe 23 years. We'll just say 22 so I feel not as old. But I wanted to share this because I realized that I am the oldest Austin comedian who has a podcast. And so since I'm doing it, let me just talk about it. And that the thing about it is that for, like, I had a good relationship and I liked Cap City for the first 8 years of doing comedy. So for 8 years, I liked them. Then for 8 years, I didn't like them and was very grr and all this stuff. And that was totally on me, by the way. Like, what'd they do? They didn't do anything. I became a bigger drunk and drug addict and egomaniac. Like, I got worse. And I think they stayed consistent, most likely. I mean, they've gone through different management and stuff. But overall, the development and booking of comedians, I don't think has altered all that much. So it, you know, by looking at it, that it certainly looks like, you know, my opinion changed because I changed. So for 8 years, I liked them, right? Then for 8 years, I totally didn't. And then for the last 6 years, I had a more realistic view of them, which is, you know, mad respect for what they did. Not, you know, I didn't enjoy, you know, performing in like the big room. I liked the small room. I didn't like the big room, but like just as a club, like one of the best clubs in the country. Like I knew, you know, as a comedy club goes, and I had fucked myself in the way that I had become, did comedy. And let me explain. So, and by the way, this is all about like my experience in, with the club. So like, if this doesn't interest you at all, just go to the next one or, you know, follow, you know, find, you know, we'll see you next week or whatever. But listen, so the thing about it is about Cap is like, I started there's another club in Austin, and who knows if it's going to make it, by the way, out of this kind of, this fucking pandemic and, you know, the economy and getting no assistance. No real assistance, I guess. No long-term, like, investment. The Velveeta Room, which is a smaller room. It's not an... So like, Cap City is an A room, and that's, like, where touring headliners come in. And this was, you know, and at the time, this was before comedians would play, like, the Paramount. Like, bigger names would come out, you know. So it would be like... So the big names would go to Cap City. Well, the Velveeta Room, which, you know, seats no more than, what, 70, 75 people at the most if you pack them in. So it's a much smaller room, but it was more like it was, you know, it was smoky and it was dark and it was just like, ah, and it was perfect. It was like an old school, like, you know, speakeasy style nightclub type thing. And that's what I liked better. So I started at the Velveeta Room. And there was already, when I started, there was already this faction of, you know, Cap City, you know, you got paid better. You know, you got to work with the big names, but you hung out at the Velve because they were Velveeta Room comics. And there was something called Comedy Gym where they taught you how to do stand up at the at Cap City. And there was this whole mindset of, you can't be taught how to do comedy. You got to grind it out here and get shit on by all of us, kind of an attitude. So I automatically started off going, yeah, fuck that club, because that's what these older guys say. So that's what I'm going to parrot. And then as you get older, then you run into other comics who are really good, who developed on their own, but they started at Comedy Gym, and they're like, no, it's a great place to start off when you don't have anything. And then you have to kind of go, all right, I guess it worked for you, like comedians that you respect, and all of a sudden it's, you know, your worldview isn't, you know, the truth. So you go, but I started, you know, but that was the thing, is that the only thing that I would look at Cap City for at the beginning was like, oh, that's where you ultimately have to do comedy to play. But this is where I want to learn, down on 6th Street, and get drunk, have a lot good time. And then we'll go to Cap City to see certain comedians, and then we'll participate in the comedy contest they have every year, which is called the Funniest Person in Austin contest. And so we would compete in that every year. And it was just a madhouse, crazy, you know, bitter type of competition, like every year. And, you know, where you really thought it, you know, it meant a whole lot more to you in your head that month that it was going on than it really has. Like, you know, this means the world to almost 100 people, and then nobody else gives a shit. Like, it's that kind of a thing. But it really, I don't know, it was just kind of this routine you started getting into. And I developed, but the thing is, the contest allowed people, as well as the open mic there, allowed the club to kind of see you and see, oh, that person, I'll kind of keep my eye on them. And that allowed me to get booked there, because I started doing better after, you know, I don't know if I started getting better or if I got less shitty. It's kind of whatever your point of view is, but I started getting better and I got booked, and, you know, and I worked, you know, as a host for a week. You know, you're the opener comic, and then you bring on the feature act, and then the headliner. And I got to work with so many comics. I worked so many weeks there for those first, what, 6 to 8 years. I mean, I got to work with, you know, it's how I got to meet Jimmy Pardo or Jimmy Dore. I hosted for Joe Rogan when he recorded his first DVD, back when he was fucking nuts, just, you know, rabid, because he was young. It was like 20 years ago, right? So I did that. I worked with Todd Barry. Worked with my favorite comedian of all time, Dave Attell. And one of the best weeks, there's this touring headliner named Bill Dwyer, who has been doing, he's been hosting game shows and stuff for the past decade, I think. I don't know if he still tours, but he was a headliner at the time, but he agreed to be a feature because he'd be working with Dave. So Dave was the headliner, Bill Dwyer was the feature, and then I was the host, and it was the fucking best week. Just, I mean, we were just, it was crazy. Just, you know, a lot of drinking, but also just some of the best shows. And I got to open for Mitch Hedberg. And if you're wondering what Mitch Hedberg was like, he was exactly like you think he would. He would be off stage, quiet, kept to himself. He said like two sentences to me. He said, hello. And one night he said, that was a great set. I think that's all he ever said to me the entire week. He was nice. He was just kept to himself, which is exactly how you probably picture him. So I had a lot of great weeks there. And I guess what happened is I got older and I got more cocky because I developed my own show, my own insult comedy show, years before anybody else did it. Yeah, I did that. But and I got really full of myself, but also because I was a really professional drunk by this point. And I just kind of got an ego about myself, and I really felt like I deserved more time that I should have been, because I'd been headlining at the Velveeta Room and doing different shows, but they weren't featuring me at Cap City. And I thought, I felt at the time that I needed, that they needed to bump me up, and they weren't bringing me up. And even though I had conversations with management about it, and they were like, you know, oh, you know, and they were honest about how they felt that I needed to grow in certain aspects, and I took offense to it. And in retrospect, I think we were both kind of right. You know what I mean? Like, from their point of view, I totally get their point of view. I felt like I was ready, and the truth is, had they put me up, I would have been fine. But from their point of view, like when you come out of the haze and you sober up and you start looking back and you start thinking about yourself, you start going, yeah, no, I kind of sucked. Yeah, I could have used some work. They were absolutely right. I was not very professional. I was kind of an egomaniac. Not to say I'm any less, but I think I'm more aware of the ego, I guess. So there was a few, you know, I kind of went, well, fuck you guys then, kind of an attitude, and really went off the deep end with booze and drugs while doing comedy any place else but there, kind of a deal. And which is why when you see, it's funny because I'm really noticing it now, because people are posting all their pictures that they've taken over the years at Cap on social media, just kind of celebrating the place. And yeah, so all these pictures, and the thing is, if you look at them, I'm not in any of them. Because I would do comedy and then take the fuck off. I wouldn't hang out there. I would go hang out with my friends at my bar on 6th Street, or I would hang out at the Valve. So I didn't hang out at that club. And you know, and so it's really, you can really tell that I had a kind of a chip on my shoulder on it. But even when I had a chip on my shoulder about the club, it was still Cap City. That was still the place to be. And it was the place to be because, and you'll see anybody who posts about it, you'll see them talk about the staff, because the management, the wait staff, the bartenders, everybody was so fucking good at what they did, that place just hummed. It just clicked, and they just kicked ass. They always kicked ass. And people were taken care of. And that's why comics like to hang out there. And there's a lot of clubs that people want to just kind of take off. Now, I felt that I was too cool for it. And in retrospect, I kind of wish I would have hung out more. I mean, I don't regret the decisions I've made, because I made a lot of friends in my, you know, punk rock bars and different music venues and, you know, assholes that I've met and stuff. But I kind of wish that I had gone out and drank even more and then also went there. No, but I wish I had also, because there was a lot of things that I missed out on. And there's a lot of, you know, and a lot of people, they're just, you know, they went there all the time because it was just a great vibe. And that's why like touring headliners will constantly, you'll constantly see different touring headliners over the decades have said that Cap City was, you know, is one of their favorite places to play, because, you know, the Austin audiences are great and it's just a good vibe for a professional show. And that's just the way it is. And, you know, the thing about it is that, I mean, and you've seen, and I just kind of wanted to talk about, and the reason I wanted to talk about it was because I was never a huge fan. You know, I never was one of these. I've always been kind of you know, that club's fine, but you know, it's only been the past, you know, 6 years or so, as I've matured and calmed the fuck down, that I've kind of that I've been able to really be nostalgic and reflect back and really respect what they've done over the years and the decades with that place, and what they did for me, and you know, I became a better person and a better comic because of that club existing. You know, even in the years that I had the chip on my shoulder, it was still, that was still like the, and I'm going to do it in spite of them, or I'll show them kind of a thing. It was still, they were still motivating me even when I was like, about them, which is just hilarious when you think about it. It's like, wow, they even helped you out when you weren't going. And it's also interesting to see when you look online, I've looked at so many different of the comedians I know, different posts about it, and they're all like consistent with why they enjoy it. They all, you know, talk mad, you know, just mad props about the staff and about, you know, and their friends and everything being there and what a great place it is. And in fact, there's only been one person I've seen that's posted anything negative. And of course his, you know, and I didn't see it. Somebody had to send it to me and like, look at this asshole. And I saw who it was, and he's an abysmal comic and an abysmal person, just an toxic, unfriendly person. So it's not out of character, you know, who talked about how, you know, Cap City never booked me for anything. I'm like, well, first of all, you never really tried. Second of all, you didn't develop past a certain level. And third, you're just a nasty person to be around. So fuck that guy, by the way. And some of you listening, you know who he is. So fuck him. You know, just he'll die alone. It's like talking shit on the same day of club close. You fucking idiot. And the thing, here's the thing I wanted to address about it is there's a lot of people who are posting about how, you know, because people are sad and depressed about it, and there's a lot of people, but then there's other people who aren't comedians, who aren't in the scene, and they're all posting like, well, hey, you know, Joe Rogan's moved to Austin, you know, he's gonna start a club, maybe, or maybe he'll buy the club, or, you know, there'll be a place. And all right, now the funny part about all of that situation is a lot of the comedians I know don't like Rogan at all. And they were horrified to find out he was moving here because, because they're really liberal and they don't think that he's liberal. Some of them have even called him alt-right, which is hilarious because he's not. But the thing is, I like Rogan. I listen to his podcast. Of course I am. Look at me. Old and I'm white. I'm an old white dude. Of course I like this podcast. And I like, you know, I like his interview. I like long form interviews and all that stuff. So with that being said, let me just point out the obvious here about that situation. It's like, you know, so you know, just so that you stop making the suggestion, hey, maybe Joe Rogan will, just leave it alone. Because here's the deal. Imagine that you had a neighborhood bar that you went to, like Cheers. Yeah, like that TV show. Imagine you had a bar that you went to for a couple of decades. And imagine that you're not an alcoholic. All right, let's pretend that you went to a bar for two decades and then didn't become an alcoholic. Fairy tale. Let's follow me. Anyway, so imagine that you had a hangout, okay, or a pool hall. Let's say you went to a pool hall that you played pool and you developed your game for 20 years. You went to this fucking pool hall or you went to this bar, right? It's where all your friends hung out, and then it closed down. And then you find out that Bill Murray, who you like, Bill Murray is going to open up a bar. Or that people say, hey, it's okay about your neighborhood bar that you've invested emotionally for 20 years. Bill Murray's building a bar. Yeah, but it's going to be filled with Bill Murray fans who are dicks. It's like, I like Rogan. I don't like Rogan fans who are going to want to go. Like, it's not. And the thing is, it's not about like, oh, my God, where will we go for comedy? There'll be places. Voids are always filled. There's always going to be a place when comedy comes back. when you're able to do stand-up comedy indoors safely, let me just say that, because there'll be different, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the future, and that's the deal. But the idea is, it's not about, oh no, where am I going to do comedy again? It's about all the memories and the nostalgia and the emotional connection you have to a place and a community. And you can't just replace it because a dude that's well known has money. It just doesn't, you know, how do you not see that? It's not going to be, that's not the same. The future is uncertain in that, you know, who knows what's going to happen? Because the other thing about that is that people are like, well, Rogan's going to start a club. Yeah, but Joe's also going to wait till it's safe. He's even said multiple times that the whole idea was, the reason he's not, you know, he did one show in Houston, but after that, he's like, I'm not going to do that shit again, because he didn't want to be the cause of other people getting sick and maybe dying. And so he's going to wait it out. You know, yeah, he's going to probably look to build a club or to buy a, who knows what he's going to do there. You know, that's going to be a whole other thing. But, you know, we're all going to have to wait it out and see what happens. You know, until then, you know, there's going to, maybe there's comedy in the park. Maybe there's different other things. You know, maybe somebody's going to come up with better ideas than, hey, let's all try to do stand up to people on Zoom. You know, maybe that'll get better. I don't, you know, technology will make it better to where the audience actually feels you can connect somehow. But, you know, until then, until we can get back to an actual, you know, where we can do comedy with a crowd, when a crowd can gather indoors again, we'll see. But the thing is that, yeah, there'll be new places. New history will be written as new hangouts, new clubs, or new venues, you know, the community evolves and changes. So there's always going to be a place. There's always going to be something that we're, you know, that brings performers and people together. That'll be there. I'm not concerned about that. I mean, you know, if we're able to do it. I'm more concerned about the if. Not the where, or, but you have to understand that that's what people are mourning. They're mourning the loss of, you know, the location and the, you know, and the camaraderie and everything that Cap City gave. You know, even, you know, positive and negative, especially for me. And that's what's been you know, conflicting for me, is because, you know, there's, because I've got those mixed feelings, and you know, most people who are posting, you know, love the place. I, you know, had a love-hate relationship with it, but I cannot deny how special that place is, how amazing the staff, the management, you know, all the different managers and bartenders and people I knew, the Margie and, Rich and my bartender, Bud Mark. Chandy, Katie, like all these people that I knew, I mean, that were just top notch, man. Everybody kicked ass there. All the comedians that I met there, all the comedians that I know, like, you know, Punch every Tuesday for a while, that, you know, for years and years, you know, became the best show in Austin. They're just, it was a very special place. And it sucks a lot for everybody that it's gone. You know, I'm interested to see what happens in the future. Absolutely. So we'll see on that. But give credit where credit is due, and mad respect for Cap City Comedy Club. And, you know, RIP. But, yeah, you guys, it's a thing. We'll see what happens. And it's, you know, man, yeah, I'm just kind of sitting here going, fuck, dude, shit's changing. So I appreciate you letting me just kind of talk it out. But anyway, everybody hang in there, you know, keep in touch with everybody that you care about. be safe. You know, stay sober if you're sober. Stay sane if you're not sober. Take care of yourself. And we'll see you next week. This has been... Oh, yeah. Sorry. That's the thing. I just went, yes, because I was about to say that this is, yes, I'm still sober. I forgot to say the biggest connection, the weirdest connection with that place is I got my first DWI. Leaving Cap City when I was hanging out in the parking lot longer doing shit I shouldn't have been doing in the first place. And I was late coming home, you know, because I was married at the time. And so I was speeding drunk home and I got my first DWI. So that started me on my, you know, downward trajectory for the next 8 years. But that was like the moment. So it's Cap City's been tied to that part of me as well. Like, you know, are you blaming them? No, it's special. It's like, oh man, I got my first DWI from there. Like it's a weird nostalgia for me personally, but it makes total sense if you know me. So man, yeah. Cap City, you will be missed. Love all you guys. This is Yes, I'm Still Sober. I'm John Raven. We'll see you next week. Later. Back down to earth again. The cold is creeping deep inside. Disconnect the telephone.